big tunes keep coming.
Oh, my gosh.
Best friends are in and out these courtrooms. My lawyer like a jack. I jump on your song and make a label think they need ya. For real. Yeah.
On that board. Okay. 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 On that board. We on out of board.
If you're young at heart, for it's hard you will find to be narrow of mind. If you're young at heart, you can go to extremes with impossible schemes.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. Good evening and welcome to Older Women Live, feminist radio from an elderly perspective. We're on the air the second Wednesday of each month, this time slot from 6 until 7. I'm Rosemary Wally, and I can hardly believe that this is the last show of 2022, but it is. Last Saturday, the 10th of December, was International Human Rights Day, marking the 74th anniversary of the adoption of the Charter by the UN Assembly on the 10th of December, 1948. It's a very profound and beautiful piece of legislation, worked on by a committee of jurists headed by Eleanor Roosevelt, who was the wife of the president. It was a totally mammoth task just after the Second World War. One of the principal jurists was a Canadian, John Peters Humphrey, who was from New Brunswick, and he was a McGill professor. The Charter sets out a list of rights we have as individuals. Needless to say, they're not always or even often respected. Today, we're going to hear a bit more about the Charter with our guest, Diane Johnston. Thank you very much, Diane, for joining us. We're also going to look at how older women contribute to peace in our troubled world. And for that, we're going to be talking to Christine Dandino and Laurel Thompson, I hope, and maybe even Alison Hacker, but they're not with us yet. They're going to help us delve into this. But can we start with the question of human rights, Diane?
Yes, of course. And I would like to emphasize what you have just said in the sense that our rights, and here in particular, I'm talking about our civil rights, they are, as you said, not always and often not respected. So we still have a long way to go. So on the occasion of International Human Rights Day, I'm going to be speaking about the necessity of the defense of the rights of some of the most vulnerable people, and the measure of the progress of a society is its treatment of the most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So how can a modern developed country such as Canada tolerate, for example, the growing poverty that we have here and the homelessness? With regards to the most vulnerable members of our society, there are those who find themselves without status or with precarious status. And these are people, for example, who have left their countries of origin because of war, because of regime change, violence, and sanctions, which Canada often participates in imposing alongside the US. Or they may have left their countries because of climate change, because they were unable to earn a decent living for themselves and for their families. Here in Quebec, they and their children are deprived of such basic rights, for example, as healthcare, education, and services. Many are forced to work underground because this is the only way that they can eke out a subsistence. They often face abhorrent working conditions and the constant threat of arrest, detention, and deportation. The pandemic itself brought to light the fact that during the confinement of these workers, along with international students, they were forced to place themselves on the front lines as essential workers in hospitals, in seniors' homes, grocery stores, filling the shelves, making deliveries, because they were abandoned by both the Quebec and the federal governments. And although they may have been paid lip service by Premier Legault, for example, when he included them alongside nurses and orderlies and others in speaking about them as our guardian angels, no real recognition of their contribution came for the majority of them. For example, only a few were able to profit from a pathway to permanent residency, simply because the others had not provided direct care to seniors who had contracted COVID. More and more, these migrant workers are openly and bravely denouncing their working and living conditions alongside those working on the ground in their defense. That is the many community and human rights organizations, immigration, labor, and constitutional lawyers, medical professionals, workers organizations, and many others.
Well, I thought I would talk to you about one of these undocumented workers, who was my darling cleaning lady, my Carmen. I'm going to try to do this and not cry. So for 10 years, every second Tuesday, I had this beautiful woman, Carmen, who came to clean my house. She adored cleaning. She was a professional cleaning lady. And it was a question of her mental health. She had a very hard life in Portugal. She had a cousin in Laval who told her there was plenty of work in Canada. So Carmen, filled with excitement, sold everything, took leave of her adult daughter, who was a young adult, and arrived in Montreal just 10 years ago this week. There was a snowstorm, of course. For the first couple of months, she went to work with her cousin. But she soon wanted her independence and she wanted her own houses to clean. She could see that this was quite lucrative. She knew nothing about immigration, the immigration process. She'd never heard of it. And the cousin hadn't mentioned it. Carmen knew that there was a healthcare here and social security if people lost their jobs. She was honestly eager to pay into the system and enjoy those protections and was crushed to find herself illegal and undocumented. We went to an immigration lawyer in Côte-des-Neiges here in Montreal who suggested applying for legal status on humanitarian grounds, for which Carmen would have had to write down her life story in Portuguese, and it would then be translated, and the process would take approximately 3 years. Now, Carmen had had a very hard life, a very violent life, was an intensely personal private person, and was not about to divulge her life story to the Canadian immigration. She just couldn't do it. Instead, with very limited language skills, but with tremendous courage and warmth, the lovely Carmen set about building a cleaning business for herself. She used to say that her bus pass, it was a bus pass, made her feel human because she was like everybody else. I signed the lease for her and she was just another immigrant. And looking at her, you'd have seen a woman on her way to and from work. She lived in her own apartment. The daily routine was hard. But the thing that really scared her and that she hated was being illegal. There's this humiliation now that we never even think about. You can't open a bank account. You can't have a credit card. You can't enroll in any kind of language courses that the government offers. It took a tremendous toll on Carmen. And then there were health issues. She fell going into the metro, Villa Maria Metro. I told her to wear different boots, but she wouldn't listen. Anyway, she broke her wrist. Another time, she had a terrible abscess in her mouth and needed dental care. But nothing prepared any of us for the pandemic, and certainly for thousands upon thousands of undocumented people, as you say, Diane, it was catastrophic. Carmen lost her work and depended upon her patrons for money. She was too scared to get vaccinated, even though I kept telling her it's going to be okay. She never complained. She thought of herself as strong, and somehow she never caught the virus. But sadly, 18 months ago, her luck ran out. She discovered a lump on her right breast. with no health care, no card to sell it. She was stuck. She knew right away it was cancer because her body felt different. Gradually, the cancer spread to her lungs and she had to stop working. She just made it back to Lisbon in time and in a clean bed, well taken care of, with morphine for the pain. She died after 2 weeks. She was only 57. So I'm sorry about my
It's fine. There are very many tragic stories, and very often people are forced to leave their countries because of violence, etc. I'd like to give you one example of a situation here in Montreal. In July of 2020, for example, there was an application for a class action lawsuit that was filed at Quebec Superior Court against the Quebec government for having tolerated the illegal refusal to provide medical service free of to provide medical services free of charge to undocumented migrants and those with precarious status, their children, even though those children were born in Canada. So no medical services for children born here who are in fact Canadian citizens. Okay. And on top of that, to get medical services, these parents who are already in dire straits financially, they were being charged very knowingly by the Quebec government, 200% charge. So twice as much as they should have been charged. The case was finally won. Many professionals, lawyers, community workers, all kinds of doctors, nurses spoke in favor of these people and in defense of their rights. And the case was finally won. We can also speak here, for example, about the situation whereby there are agreements between Quebec and the federal government, where asylum seekers are detained in Quebec prisons, in a detention center such as in Laval, but also in Quebec prisons. And they're given no idea about when they're going to be released. And very often, those who are imprisoned, they are the ones that have mental health issues or problems. An agent simply decides that they may not show up at their hearing. And on those grounds, they're charged like criminals. There are very many things that must be changed. At the same time, Quebec is in need of a workforce, and many of these migrants have been here for years, and they're fully integrated into Quebec life and in culture. And there is a very determined fight going on right now. And this movement is expanding for a regularization program for these people so that they are provided finally with permanent residency. And I just want to use this occasion to encourage everybody to join this fight so that their rights as human beings are finally provided with a guarantee. It's pmlq.qc.ca. Not only are we writing about these issues, but we are also regularly holding meetings and Zooms to discuss the situation of the human rights of all within our society and how to bring those issues forward, how to move them forward.
Well, thank you very much. It's been so informative, Diane. Let's stop now and hear our first piece of music, which is for my darling Carmen. She adored Celine Dion. And as we all know, Celine, dear Celine, at the moment is very sick. So I think a lot of us in Quebec are thinking of Celine Dion. Mm-hmm. So the song, of course, is My Heart Will Go On.
I feel you, that is how spaces between us.
Okay, so let's move on to our second topic. We're going to talk about the role of older women in the peace movement. What is our role? And we'd like to introduce and thank Christine Dandeno for being here with us. And Christine is also a comrade from the Marxist-Leninist Party, as well as Laurel Thompson, who is a writer and professor and has lived in the States for a long time, and has now been in Montreal for a few years, and has worked a lot on transport issues, and is now doing peace stuff.
Well, I will speak as a person that is part of the society in Quebec and in Canada, yeah. And that the issue of war and peace is a very important preoccupation for everybody. More specifically, because the involvement of the Canadian government and Quebec government, U.S. war machine for domination around the world. The movement of peace movement or anti-war movement is very active since a lot of years because Quebec and Canadian people don't accept that Canada have an aggressive role or a pro-war role around the world with other countries.
Yes.
To this issue of the day to date, the December 10th of the human rights.
Yeah,
day, I think that as you said, this day was declared in 1948.
Yeah.
It was very few years after the Second World War. And this declaration was to affirm the human right of the people. And this issue of the fight for security, for respect of right for have a place to live, to eat, to be educated, to participate in society is still a big battle on those days, because this situation is still a big issue, because this right, the human rights are negated in so many ways in the society. But still, this is the fight. I talk about that because it's part of the fight for peace. That's a human right to be able to live in society that serves the well-being of the people, and war is opposed to that. Starting point is that when we speak about right, is that it belongs to you as a human being. It's not an issue of privilege or possibility. It has to be affirmed. And that's the fight people are waging, to affirm those rights. So to be a human in society that can participate and have a food, education, and everything, to be a human. Because if you are not able to enjoy that, how can you be a human? So that's the way it's put today. And to go back to this issue of war, women are at the first range,
at the forefront.
The forefront of the fight for peace and against war here in Canada and Quebec and around the world, because we can see they are the most part of the most vulnerable, and they are affected by it in so many ways. And for me in Quebec and Canada, the way it has to be looked at is that what kind of Canada we want. What kind of Canada we want? We don't want a Canada pro-war. We don't want our country to be involved in aggression that the U.S. is making around the world for their domination. In that way, Canada and Quebec is participating very actively on those days in the war machine and interest of the U.S. Mm-hmm. And what you propose me to talk about in order to inform people who listen to the radio show is about actually the role of the Quebec government that we have set for Quebec economy, being part of the processing critical minerals in the Bécancour region.
Yes, this is very interesting, because I think that people don't know about this, especially in the Anglophone world.
Yes.
I think many people don't know where Bécancour is. I do cycle there, but it's on the St. Lawrence River, isn't it? Like in the middle.
Yes. Bécancour is on the St. Lawrence River, is central Quebec, provides world-class industrial and port infrastructure to support the establishment of heavy industry. Targeted by Legault government as essential infrastructure for the further integration of Quebec into U.S. economy and war machine.
That's very scary.
It is. The U.S. government is making no secret on the fact that it is working to secure a made-in-America supply chain for critical minerals, including rare earth elements like lithium, cobalt, nickel, graphite, which, among others, are needed to ensure the U.S. War machine. No number of declarations that the aim is beneficial to the people of Quebec and Canada by ensuring green energy transition. That's the way it is presented, very nice, very innocent. But it's a key example of this transition, that infrastructure that is being built serves the war machine of the U.S. driving for world domination. Because all this production is very needed. Like we talked about critical mineral needed. Let me give you good example, missile, portable equipment that soldier carry, and all many things like that. And so part of the, you can say, international situation that Canada, part of the US plan is to get rid of China or to make problem with China. They need to develop our own economy for to respond to their request. So I think that is very important to inform people about that.
Laurel, do you have stuff to add to this?
Canada is the second biggest country in the world. And just the way the United States wants to get control over Russia's resources, I would think they would want to get control over our resources too. And so this plan to secure those critical minerals for the green transition does not surprise me. That does not surprise me. It's very frightening because we're going to lose even more control over what we've got.
It's presented as if it's for the green transition, but it's mainly for military purposes at the same time. So that's what's so dangerous about it, as Christine was explaining, you know, like it really is for the U.S. war machine.
Recent developments have highlighted the aggressive military aims that are behind the building of these plants and infrastructure. Major emphasis is being placed on having Canada break its relation with China so that the U.S. military can take over various mining deposits in Canada through public funding recently announced by the Biden government. Public funds in the U.S. were given to the military, and now the military is using them to help U.S. companies taking over various mining initiatives in Canada and to place Canada and its resource, territories, and workers under their control. This is all done in the name of national security and countering Chinese influence on Canada. And people of Quebec and Canada are kept in the dark or presented as a fait accompli. At the beginning of November, the Canadian government ordered three Chinese firms to divest from a trio of Canadian-based mining company under the oaks of safeguarding Canada's national security. These are attempts led by the intelligence agency to wipe up hysteria against China in order to establish uncontested U.S. control over Canada's critical mineral and supply chain through infrastructures such as port, highway, railway. And Quebec Prime Minister François Legault energy transition involved with what is government called a global battery cluster in the industrial and port area of Bécancour. So it's a very huge plant, very huge plant, and a lot of company like in Brazilian mining oligopol Vale announced plans to set up in Bécancour. The plant will process annually 25,000, 25,000 tons of nickel sulfate into nickel sulfate, the chemical compound used in the production of nickel-based lithium-ion battery. And this nickel will come from Vale mining operation in Voisey Bay, Labrador, or Sudbury, Ontario. And Vale and General Motors announced that they have signed a deal to supply nickel from a proposed Vale plant in Bécancour. The other aspect that interests those companies is that they are dealing to have a very low price for electricity. And
yes,
everybody knows about what kind of secret deal Quebec government made with critical company so that they have a very low price for using the electricity in Quebec. And that's the interest also of those companies to come here, because they will have a lot of help in that way.
Yeah.
There's another company called Nouveau Monde Graphite that are developing graphite 120 kilometers north of Montreal. It's an open pit mine. And also, the mining project was approved by the Quebec government with all the environmental studies requested by the Bureau d'audience publique sur l'environnement. having been completed. The owner of the company include a British group called Paling Earth and Investissement Québec. They have been joined by a Japanese company, and which announced on October 20 that they were investing 25 million US. And the contribution of Investissement Québec with Pellington of $12.5 million. Anyway, huge amount of money are put at the services of those companies to develop that type of industry to serve the purpose of the U.S.
Yeah.
And the way it's presented publicly is that it's for energy transition, green energy transition. So that's when we heard about this big declaration, like today with the COP15, big declaration that they want to protect biodiversity and they want to have green transition. If it's very important, it's the purpose, the real purpose of it. How can someone be not for green transition? It's for if it is to protect, but the fact that it is used for war machines that destroy the society and biodiversity, a big destructor, to be very vigilant about those declarations. And the main thing is that there's a big transition about that focus in Canada today, how to develop that industry, integration of the U.S. economy and war machine. And as I say, the Biden government facilitate that with the money given to the military to help those companies in Canada and Quebec. Other thing I want to say also, because it's very important, if I can, let me see my note. Oh yeah, like for other example of that interest, Blinken, when he came here with and visit with Mélanie Joly, you know, they were at Metro Jean Talon and blah, blah, blah with a parade. The fact is that he visited Canada during October 27, 28 visit to Canada, aim at telling Canada to fall in line with the U.S. attempt to further isolate China and Russia and further integrate Canada into the U.S. war machine. Blinken, Secretary of State, along with Foreign Minister Mélanie Joly, visited a pilot plant in Montreal for recycling lithium-ion battery for electric vehicle. The pilot plant is called Recyclage Lithium. It's jointly owned by foreign private interest General Motors and a South Korean company and Canadian and Quebec government. And Legault invested $15 million in equity in Recyclage Lithium and provided $7.5 million in subsidies to this company. Different activities are done in that way to develop all this infrastructure, because they need that infrastructure. The U.S. interests and Canada have no problem with that. And as you said, Laurel, in that all this situation, there is no indication that the government will be able to control where these processes mineral will end up, because they don't have any control. Who decide, you know? In other words, the supply chain and critical mineral that begin with their extraction and then their processing is not under the control of the government, but rather Anglo-American, Brazilian, European, Japanese, and private interests that compete with China and Russia. Legault never called that way, but the facts are the facts.
And Legault welcomes this investment because it creates jobs and it's good for the Quebec economy. And so he can be seen to be improving life for Quebecers. And if they don't investigate too deeply, they don't realize what it is that they're giving away.
In fact, yes.
And he's very good at that. I'm going to an event tomorrow in Mercier-Hochelaga at the Marché Maisonneuve. There's a protest against the Raymond Logistics.
Oh yeah, tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow at the Marché Maisonneuve. And that's a group of citizens who are protesting against turning that industrial area into a container ship trucking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, you know, does, I think, I mean, right now the St. Lawrence is only 35 feet deep, and that would not be deep enough for container ships. Does Legault have plans to dig deeper into the St. Lawrence so that
that's a good question.
Container ships can come up all the way to Montreal, unload, and then put the products on this land at Raymond Logistics near Viao, a metro station, mm-hmm. and then truck them elsewhere. I'm not sure, but that's probably part of his larger plan, if this is indeed what you're saying. You know?
Yes. It's a good point because it's huge territories that are used for those containers. Huge.
And the residents who live nearby are absolutely right to be concerned, because it's going to destroy it as a place to live, where they live. It's going to be noisy, going to be polluted. They won't be happy there once that starts. There's a march happening tomorrow, 1 o'clock at the Marché Maisonneuve. Oh. This is the thing we're up against. The globalization of the world economy has been so damaging to our authority over what happens where we live. And now we're coming up against some terrible problems with that. And finally, I think we have a turn of events that is pushing back against globalization. And I hope that it's going to lead to our taking more control over our economy than we have now. I really do think that the pushback that Russia and China are trying to make in Ukraine is an effort to change the dollar-dominated economy run by the United States to some other currency or some other system whereby everybody is not trying to do things with American dollars.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yes,
and the U.S. doesn't have so much power. I honestly think that's what's happening. So,
but the other thing is that part of the fight, the people who decide, who should decide, you know, mm-hmm. that we work so hard in so many fields, but we have no say what's going on with it,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What we create, and that's the
nub. That's the
because the demand of the people are very just and very noble and very they are fighting in defense of the rights of the people. Yes. To have a good living, that's the purpose, not to make money for companies, because we are a rich country.
Yes.
So why, as it was presented at the beginning of the show, this comment sur l'émission?
Of the program.
Dealing with this issue of human rights.
Yeah.
And the fact that the human rights are not a right, it's just privilege. And if you're not on the good spot, on whatever, you have no say on mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. for your well-being, but also being part of the decision.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They say vote, and then that's it. Goodbye, and we'll come back in 4 years. So that's
it has to be challenged, and I think that's what's happening right now with Russia mm-hmm. and China. I think that's what's happening, and I'm on board with that because we really need it. The globalization has been disastrous.
Well, what globalization brings with it at the same time, a kind of internationalism that must be encouraged as well with these people from other countries who are facing all kinds of problems also because of imperialism, because of this wanting to control the world, and it turns their lives upside down. And that's also what's causing all of this massive migration and people coming here and their rights here being denied. So but this globalization, a positive side of it is this internationalism with the workers and people of various countries that must be developed at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And I like the internationalism a lot, but let's have an internationalism of the working class.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Not an internationalism of the rich.
No, exactly. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's affirm that, yes. Yeah. They cannot move without us, and they can and it's going on those very difficult circumstances, but still people don't step back.
So okay, Christina Petrovska playing Glass Houses number 5 by our very own Anne Southern, who is a Canadian composer. She's dead now, but she was a wonderful composer. Talking about non-violent civil disobedience as something that older women should do, because many of us are retired, so we have no job responsibilities, we have no mortgages anymore, we have no children at home, so why not? And you've done some of that. Maybe you can talk to us a little about it.
That's right. I have nothing to lose. I don't own a house. I'm a renter. My children are my stepchildren are grown up and in another country. I have enough money to live on, and so they really can't hurt me in any way. And I'm willing to take the risk. And I haven't done that much. There are other people who've done much more than I have. In particular, Tamara Lorentz, who lives in Halifax, I believe, and she's done this much much more extensively than I have. Under the tutelage of Eve Engler and Dimitri Lascaris, both with the Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, I have been engaging in disruption. And that's what happens, is that there's an event where a political personage of some stature, a deputy, a federal deputy, or a provincial MLA, mostly federal though, representatives, are giving a speech or are coming to a community to make an announcement of some sort. And I interrupt what they're saying, and I bring up other issues. I bring up other issues that they may be connected with, indirectly, because they would be probably federal issues, and that would mean the Liberal Party as a whole. And I've been lately pushing back against the war in Ukraine, and now the pushback against China. I'm starting to do that too. And I haven't done it that much, but I'm learning how to do it as I go, because it's tricky. But I interrupted an event in Boucherville not too long ago. It was an arms trade conference, and I argued against Canada investing money in arms in order to fight the war in Ukraine. And the way I did it was, I came to the conference. It was a big room filled with people, mostly men, and I broke into the talk. I waited to let them start and to speak and to get going, but then I burst in right in the middle of someone's speech, and I yelled out to the audience several things about how the arms trade was taking money away from housing, how we were spending more on fighter jets than we had been spending on indigenous people, and so on, and things like that. So I rattled off a bunch of statistics, and said something about how, you know, the people in that room should think about this, or they should be ashamed thinking about what they're trying to do with war. And then I was escorted out. It was nothing violent. The security people at the event were watching me. They let me talk, and then they ushered me out of the room. And I did not have at that event anybody filming me. And I'm in the business of trying to figure out how to film myself. It can be done. But that would have been a good thing, is if somebody could have filmed me while I was interrupting the arms trade conference and then put that on social media. I did that another day along with Eve Engler, and he did film it. And at that event, it was another arms trade conference, and it was mostly men in the audience. And I brought up the question that there were only a few women there. And I said, what are you doing here? Why are you here? Why are you women helping men go to war and so on like that? I was quite critical of them. Anyway, I was ushered out of that event, and so was Eve Engler. We left the event and we just sort of regrouped and talked about what we did and what we could have done differently. It's not painful. It's not difficult, as long as you leave when they want you to leave, I guess. I haven't been arrested yet for this. I can see that I might be arrested. If I am, I'm prepared to get arrested. I was arrested with Extinction Rebellion for blocking René Lévesque in 2020, and was a group of us, about 12 of us. We were arrested, and we had a lawyer, and I know I have the name of a good lawyer, and we negotiated a plan whereby if we did community service, we would have the arrest taken off our records. And I chose actually to donate some money to a women's shelter here in Montreal, and that was sufficient to have it removed from my record. Anyway, I'm prepared to do it again. I have nothing to lose.
Well, and the thing about it is that I just want to add, because it sounds interesting, is that as old women with white hair, we are non-threatening.
Yes.
And I think that's a very important point. You know, we're not kind of 6 foot tall young men or something.
No. No.
So I think it's worth thinking about and working on that idea.
It's tricky, yeah, because my model is Eve Engler, and he interrupts practically weekly. He interrupted Chrystia Freeland, he interrupted Pablo Rodriguez, he interrupted Trudeau, he's interrupted nearly everybody who comes to Quebec, and we have many, many federal ministers in Quebec to find an occasion. And he also knows how to film himself when he's doing it. That's what I haven't figured out how to do, but I'm working on it. And I plan to continue, because I like manifestations. I like protests. What I like about disruption is that it's even more direct. It's more in your face, and it's so easy for politicians to blow us off, to say, oh, there was another manifestation. There were 500 people or whatever. It's so easy for them to say that, and we don't want to hurt them physically, but we want to go more face to face with them about what they're doing. And we have a federal government now, which is doing stuff with impunity that they shouldn't be doing. And one of those things is supporting the war in Ukraine and carrying on with the purchase of weapons. Wayne Iyer, the deputy minister of defense. No, he's not that. He's of the Canadian Forces. He's deputy leader of the Canadian Forces. He gave a speech not too long ago where he said Canada needs to invest billions in weapons because we're getting ready for a worldwide confrontation with China.
Well, and what can I say? I think that my problem with that disruption thing is that it does not grow the peace movement. It does not bring more people out on the streets, you see. And I think that raising awareness and getting more people involved in a bigger movement is very,
it's
very
critical. Yeah. It's
what
critical.
What do you think, Diane, of these issues?
Well, I think it's really important to raise consciousness on different issues. It's a question of appealing to ordinary people, trying to involve them in the issues and in not only involving them, but also getting them to express themselves and to use their voice to make their claims on the society with regards to their human rights.
Disruption is kind of a last resort action. If we had a big anti-war movement, I wouldn't do it. But I feel the need to do something, and so I do what I can. But what we really need is a big anti-war movement.
For sure, organizing that kind of discussion and that kind of program that the people can heard and be informed about what's going on. It's very important because disinformation is part of society now. Mm-hmm. Just to hide facts, to hide activities, to permit impunity about what's going on, and that we are unpowered about that. If you know something, you're more powerful than if you don't know. Mm-hmm. How it works, how it make the links about all those things, because it's always presented as separate thing. Okay, green transition, okay, healthcare or US. We are part of the world, and this world is moving on different two directions, like to defend humanity or no. So part of that is what I think that kind of program is important. I think that to have people knowing that they can speak more confident about what's going on and affirm things, because part of that disinformation is that you doubt on your own experience. It negates your experience about what's going on. Like that COP15, it's a big practice for the power and military to make a exercise, you know, how to deal with demonstration and security and blah, blah. If we know information and if we are involved in that, it's very important. That gives more confidence in the people. That's my point.
Yeah.
And my point was the issue of the negation of our experience. To discuss and to participate, it's very important. And people will find a place for each other. Sometimes it's their first demonstration, or they will never be in a demonstration, but they have something to say. The culture of election is that you only vote and that's it. Shut up after that, you know. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't function. Mm-hmm. That doesn't resolve anything. So we have to rise up our voice and get information.
and part of that is creating the different forums so that we do reach people and so that people are able to participate and share their experience, et cetera, and be informed, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, absolutely.
I like the idea of a forum. I've been thinking about that and thinking for a long time with the war in Ukraine, it was very dangerous to say that you were not on the side of the Ukrainians. You were against helping them. Mm-hmm. And that's changing as people learn more and more about the history before the invasion and what was going on by the NATO countries before last February.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so on and so on. And I've been thinking that we really could use some kind of an educational forum where we talk about that, where we bring speakers who know and who've studied what was going on before February and who can help people, ordinary people, you know, realize that this war was actually planned a long time ago and is deeply, deeply embedded in a plot, you know, that was hatched by the Americans many, many years ago.
Well, I think it's very important for people to see Russia was pushed into, yes, into that.
Yes.
That aspect of it, I think, is very much hidden. But
yes. But more than that, I think that what is the role of Canada in the world for peace? What is Canada's foreign policy? Like, who should decide about that?
Yes.
It is presented as a fait accompli. But we are the one who work and who produce and do everything. So we should have a say on what kind of relation we want to have with other peoples around the world. We don't want to dictate them what to do and how to do and be part of their oppression. And as it was presented at the beginning, all those migrants around the world was moving countries from countries. Our Canada is part of that phenomena. This issue, like, if you don't know much about Russia or Ukraine or whatever, the fact is that what kind of foreign policy we should have and what kind of relation we want to have with other countries and not accept the dictate of US on that.
That's right.
That's part of what the people in Quebec or Canada have to address.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's right. And this, and if any province is likely to promote the idea of a more independent foreign policy for Canada,
yeah,
in Quebec, whether we can persuade Quebecers to want to have an independent policy for Canada or just Quebec is another, yeah, issue. But Quebec,
but Canada, we live in Canada and we don't agree with what Trudeau is doing, you know.
That's right, and he's doing it with our money, and so. Yes. We need to correct him. Yeah, I agree with that. I think we should discuss that. You know, what kind of policy could we have other than the one that we're getting right now, mm-hmm, which is dominated by the United States?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to
see. And having policies on the basis of mutual benefit and all kinds of principles.
Yes.
That
we believe in. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think our time is up, sadly. It went quickly. So I'd like to thank Christine, Laurel, and Diane for being our guests on our show today. And of course, enormous thank you for our wonderful tech, Courtney Kirkby. From the OWL Collective, the Older Women Alive Collective, we wish everyone all the best for the holidays and lots of energy, lots of it, for the struggle against injustice in the new year and beyond. So stay tuned for our next show, which is Amandla, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rosemary.
Thank
everybody.
You. Yeah, thank you very much. And on this International Human Rights Day, cheers. Cheers to everybody.
Cheers, yes.
Good evening, friends and comrades, all who listen to Amandla Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM Radio here in Montreal. Want to welcome you back to our weekly show with news and analysis on the continent of Africa. This week, I've got a very interesting interview that I caught from Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, with Reed Brody about his new book that covers Well, it's entitled To Catch a Dictator, The Pursuit and Trial of Hissein Habré, which tells the story. We've covered the trial and conviction of in 2016 of Hissein Habré as it established legal precedent for African nations to try abusive tyrants for their crimes while in office. Habré's successful prosecution could provide a template for future trials of African dictators. Indeed, the success of this approach could be seen as a victory for African justice over international approaches. Despite the high profile of the International Criminal Court and its issuing of warrants, such as those against Sudanese leader Omar el-Bashir, it has failed to prosecute a single head of state. And the worst part is the vast majority of its indictments have been Africans, which quite naturally led to accusations of Eurocentric neocolonial tendencies of the court and other efforts at international justice sponsored by the Western powers, as well as a rather blatant double standard. Reed Brody knows these issues intimately as he worked